Hello, it's Sam Crowley from EverydayIsSaturday.com, introducing my interview with Vic Johnson. Vic Johnson from several different businesses, mainly Claim Your Power Now and As a Man Thinketh. And boy, I'll tell you what, you are in for a real treat hearing about Vic's story and how he really did claim his power 10 years ago when he was down, out, pretty much homeless, had his car repossessed. I mean, it is just an amazing story of someone who would not give up. So enjoy my interview right here with Mr. Vic Johnson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's Sam Crowley from EverydayIsSaturday.com, and today it is a great honor for me. We have a lot of awesome bonuses with the Every Day is Saturday CD, but if I had to pick, and that's a dangerous place to go, but this is a very special day for me. One of the greatest bonuses, I think, in this whole package is my opportunity to speak with Vic Johnson, who is a mentor of mine. He doesn't even realize that, but I'm going to give you a brief introduction of Vic, and then we're going to get after it and have very great content for the call. But first of all, who's Vic Johnson? Vic Johnson lives in Florida. He's an internet infopreneur, an author, a motivational speaker, and founder of a host of personal development websites. He's formerly the founder of a corporate and political communications firm. He has provided strategic consulting and planning to governors, to members of Congress, Fortune 500 companies, and nonprofit organizations. His non-traditional strategies have been highlighted by major news outlets like the Miami Herald, the Washington Post, and national trade publications. Vic bought his first business, and I didn't know that until today, at the age of 23, and several years later became one of the early pioneers of the Quick Lube business, building one of the first locations in Florida. His latest ventures have been internet-based, where he has quickly demonstrated his entrepreneurial acumen. Talk show host Mike Littman, who many of you have heard of as well, calls one of Vic's sites, asamanthinketh.net, the hottest personal development site on the internet today. Subscribers hail from over 90 countries. They've downloaded over 300,000 ebook copies of James Allen's classic. You can add Sam Crowley to one of those as well. His other websites are found at mydailyinsights.com, mp3motivators.com, goals2go.com, and, of course, vicjohnson.com. There's a great event coming up in L.A. this fall in L.A. Claim Your Power Now, and Vic is just awesome. I watch him every day as well. He's the host of Goals to Go on a television show on the Success Training Network, and he's Vic Johnson. What else can I say? Vic, are you with me, my friend?
I'm here, Sam. Thanks a lot.
Hey, you're welcome. I am fired up, if you haven't been able to tell already, to have you as a guest on my launch of the Every Day is Saturday CD. And, hey, Vic, let me ask you a question before we get into the interview, because this is one thing I'm curious. Did you ever in a million years, because you're the guy that lives the Every Day is Saturday philosophy, did you ever in a million years think it'd be like this?
I never knew it could be as deep and rich as this. You know, I had the dream, Sam. That's what, that's in fact, for many years, that's all I had. But I had no idea when I started to live the dream that it would be as deep and as rich as this. It's mind-blowing. I mean, I really, literally, many days pinch myself. I walk through most days, quite frankly, giving a lot of thanks through the day because it really is magical. And I never could have known that. And wouldn't have known it unless I'd lived it. But the dream was there, but no idea how deep that dream and how rich that dream could be.
That's awesome. You know, I'm going to take you back to the end of 2006, Vic. And Vic Johnson, this is how Vic Johnson ended 2006 and rang in 2007. He's at the world-famous Moulin Rouge Cabaret in Paris celebrating New Year's Eve. Those of us that have never been there, it sounds like an awesome place to ring in the new year, Vic. He has tea the next morning, New Year's Day, in La Galerie, in the same room as Prince Alois, one of the wealthiest people in the world at the Four Seasons Hotel. And again, I say, Vic, based on where you were in 1997, what was going through your mind as you rang in 2007 this year?
Well, you know, Sam, I chuckle a lot when, you know, in those particular cases, Prince Alois just happens to be the owner of the Four Seasons in Paris, as a matter of fact. He's a pretty close friend of, or I say friend, I'm not sure if that's correct, but they're a pretty close associate financially of Bill Gates. And together, the two of them, I believe, are going to purchase the Four Seasons. So I just chuckled when I looked over across the room there, and here was this person who obviously is quite financially successful. And you know, 10 years ago, you know, I could have never, ever imagined that I'd be in that place. And again, you know, part of the magic of living the dream, and you know, what it does more than anything else, it encourages me to continue to help as many people as I can help, because it, obviously, if I could do it, anybody could do it. I know that's an overworn and overused maxim, but it's true. And, you know, 10 years ago, I couldn't have parked my car at the Four Seasons. I mean, literally would not have, couldn't have afforded to park my car a day at the Four Seasons, didn't have the money to stay there and spend literally, you know, what many people, you could buy a brand new automobile for what I spent those 6-7 days in Paris. And, you know, that's so far beyond where I was, you know, 10 years ago when I'm driving a 12-year-old borrowed automobile that I begged from a friend of mine because they had picked up the last car I had. You know, to be able to, you know, go to Paris, spend New Year's there, and spend as much as you'd, you know, some people spend to buy a new car, and that's just such a juxtaposition of places to be. And you know, I that was in January. In February, I spent almost a week in Jackson Hole celebrating Valentine's Day, because that's where my fiance and I will be married January 1st, 2008, one of our favorite places on earth. And in March, of course, I was with our friend John DeLemme doing an event in Atlanta, did one of mine also, an internet millionaire boot camp in March. In April, took off again for Europe, spent 3 weeks in Italy, celebrated my fiance's birthday in Rome, took a train to Venice, spent a week in that magical city, flew down to Sorrento, had a hotel room 200 feet up a cliff, looking out over the Mediterranean, and it was like I'd go out and sit on the veranda outside and look at this view of Mount Vesuvius in the background, and this beautiful water, and it was like I was literally looking at a movie.
Wow.
And you know, Sam, those all of those are so far removed from where I was 11 years ago when our family was evicted from our home. You know, the judge gave us 48 hours to vacate the premises, had nowhere to go, had no money if I had a place to go. And that's such a strong difference that you know, it has encouraged me to help as many people as I can to live that same dream, the kind of stuff that you're doing. And you know, I think you're going to be amazed at the people that resonate with your message, the people who are looking, you know, for solutions to that you found, and you're going to be amazed at how many people are out there that are in need of that, and it's pretty exciting to be able to help them.
You know, it's awesome. That's and we're going to talk a lot about that story as well. You know, the Everyday is Saturday story is simply, it's real simple, Vic. It's about a guy who just wants to be a father. You know, and that's it. There's no really ulterior motive except to help others realize that you don't always have to thank God it's Friday. You know, there are other days of the week that are just as good as Friday.
Sure.
And once you realize that, every day truly can be Saturday. But when you talk about things that you discussed, Vic, when you were down and you were not out but close to it, how important is claiming personal responsibility for your life?
Well, I could have never taken the first step out of what I was at, and I, you know, I don't know that it was at the bottom, but certainly you could see the bottom from where I was at. I mean, I qualified in 1997 for the federal earned income tax credit. I didn't even make $15,000 that year to support a family of five. Not a lot of money. I've made $15,000 many days. I've made $15,000 in as little as 20 minutes. But in 1997, I couldn't cobble that together, you know, for the whole year. Now, had I not, Sam, taken responsibility for being in that place. It was 100% my responsibility. I couldn't blame it on my ex-spouse. I couldn't blame it on the economy. In fact, it's a joke to even think I could blame it on the economy, because you may remember in the 1990s, we're in the middle of the largest economic expansion in the history of mankind.
Yeah, that wasn't going to work.
Here in Florida, there are millionaires, multimillionaires, billionaires being created every single day by the opportunities that were here in the 1990s, and I couldn't make $15,000 in a year. I couldn't blame it on the economy. You know, there was really no place to place the blame except in one place. And I had to accept that, not the blame, not from a standpoint of beating myself up, but to finally admit, okay, it was your thinking. It was the pattern of thinking. It was the paradigms that you've lived with, the limiting thoughts you've lived with. It was the decisions you made and the choices you made that resulted in what you have now. And in many ways, that was the biggest day of freedom. In fact, I experienced more freedom and more joy probably that day than I did New Year's Day sitting in the same room with one of the wealthiest people in the world.
Wow, that's an amazing statement right there, that you experienced more freedom on that day that you claimed your own personal responsibility from where you were.
Yeah, you know why? Because, you know, once I did that, once I accepted total responsibility for my life, I said, okay, big boy, you have been so successful in getting yourself in this mess. It's 100% you. You're responsible for it all. And I figured if I could create that bad a situation, that certainly whatever I did to come out of it, that I could create something just as good because I was that powerful. In other words, I'd created that. My choices created that. The decisions I made along the way didn't happen overnight. Choices made over many years. Decisions made over many years, habits, bad habits, adopted, and particular paradigms that I accepted and lived with, limiting beliefs that I accepted and lived with, all those contributed to the outcome that I got. You know, we live in a world of cause and effect. Brian Tracy says that's the most powerful principle on earth. And if you stop and think about it, it's pretty powerful to know that every single thing that happens has a cause behind it. Something caused it. It didn't just organically happen. There was a cause there. If you change the cause, you change the effect. But you can't, you know, what's amazing is most of us, and I'm guilty of it, just like everyone else, spend most of our time, most of our energy, all of our stress trying to change the effect, trying to change the behavior. Can't change the behavior. The behavior is the effect. You got to change the cause. What is the cause of the behavior? The cause of the behavior is the thought that originated. It was the thinking that created the feelings that created the behavior. You can't, you know, our children, we try to discipline our children, the behavior that they have, the same way we try to discipline ourselves. And, whether it's a problem we have with our eating or a problem we have with our drinking or smoking or whatever it is, you try to change that behavior. And you fight and you fight and you fight. And you can't do it because you're fighting against yourself. You got to go change the cause. And when you change that cause, well, on that particular day when I finally reached that point, I felt so powerful. That's where the idea for claim your power really was born 10 or 11 years ago. I didn't know it would grow up one day and be a seminar, and you know, we'd have Bob Proctor and Jim Rohn and John DeLemme and other people like that on stage. I had no idea. But the idea that you have to claim your power, you have to take the day you take responsibility, 100% of it, all of it, over your life, for everything that's happened, good and bad, when you take 100% responsibility, you've claimed so much power. You can literally, from that point, do anything you want to do, anything that you want to do.
That's that's so powerful. Now, if you think back to 1997, Vic, when you're living below the poverty level, you got evicted from your home. Your judge gave you 48 hours to leave and go find someplace else to live. You had no money, all right? You borrowed a bombed-out Lancer from a friend of yours, right?
Right.
And what was the event, the day, that changed the direction you were going?
You know, the day I took responsibility changed the direction. There was an event that really crystallized everything. You know, I had recognized, it became very apparent. I mean, you know, when you, after you've placed the blame everywhere and nothing changes and it only gets worse, so you figure out, you know, that's not going to work, so I got to quit blaming, I better start, do something else and accept the responsibility. You know, you try a lot of things and it doesn't get better, it gets worse. You know, just being human, a person that, you know, we all respond to feedback, so to speak. So when you get this feedback, well, that didn't work, I better try something else. That didn't work, I better try something else. The day that I accepted responsibility for where I was at, that really changed the direction. But there was an event in Jacksonville, Florida, and I, you know, scraped together all the money that I had in order to get into the event. I fortunately didn't have to drive very far because I was only about 30, 45 minutes south of Jacksonville living at the time. And so I got in that old gray Lancer and I drove to a weekend event in Jacksonville. And that was, again, one of the reasons that years later that, you know, I created Claim Your Power Now, because so many things in my life have happened that would not have happened had it not been for that event. Because I was sitting there that weekend, and it was a good event. You know, I was ready. The ground was fertile. There had been a lot of preparation. I'd been reading. I'd been working on my limiting beliefs and limiting thoughts. I'd been working on, you know, changing the way that I responded. I'd been working on habits that, you know, bad habits that I'd had for many years. I'd been doing a lot of work on myself, but still hadn't made it, you know, things had still, you know, hadn't manifested themselves in the real world. I still wasn't seeing any financial change. I wasn't seeing any real change elsewhere. My health was still pretty miserable. My relationships were pretty miserable. But I was at that event in Jacksonville in October of 1997, Saturday night. The only part I remember about the whole event, and the person on stage said 13 magical words that, you know, boy, you talk about changing somebody's life. Those 13 words changed my life. She said, "The size of your success is determined by the size of your belief."
Mm.
And that, you know, hit me between the eyes so hard. I knew instantly. I mean, that those words connected in my spirit. I started to cry. And they were tears of joy because I knew it was the answer. I knew instantly that was the piece of the puzzle that I hadn't put together. You know, that was a part that was missing. And I put a lot of other things in place, but I had not put that piece in place. And I made a commitment there on the spot that I would spend the next 90 days and I would go to work on my belief. And that's all I would work on. I mean, other than the, you know, income that it took to keep my family afloat, which wasn't much, because, you know, when you've lost everything, when you don't have any, you know, health insurance coverage, you don't have health insurance premium to pay, you don't have any life insurance or those types of things, you don't have any premium. It's amazing how little you can live on when they take everything away.
Yeah, right.
You know, because you got nothing, you got no car payment because you don't have a car, you got no house payment because you don't have a house. I mean, it's amazing. So I went to work on my belief for 90 days, and I have never worked as hard on anything in my life as I did on that. I was, you know, committed to that concept because I knew that was it. And, you know, at the end of January, which was about 90 days later, you know, I started to see some significant things happening. I began to attract people into my life, opportunities into my life that had not been there, and they were, you know, all the right people and all the right opportunities. And within 6 months of that night, I had qualified for a national contest. Within 12 months of that night, I had created a six-figure income. So I go from less than $15,000 a year in 1997 to over $100,000 in 1998. And from there on, it's just been a rocket ride straight up. It was that evening that, you know, I just shudder to think what would have happened in my life had I not gone to that event. And that's, you know, why I tell people, you know, if the message we have about Claim Your Power Now resonates with you, then you got to be in Los Angeles October 12th, 13th, and 14th, because it could be your weekend. That could be the weekend that turns your life into the, you know, life of your dreams, which has happened to me, you know, since that night, 1998. I was able to dig our way out in 1999. It got even better in 2000, better, and in 2001, I launched our first website with the idea that, you know, it would create another $10,000 or $15,000 a year in an additional stream of income, and before too long, it was creating that every month. And now it's creating seven-figure income, and gives me the flexibility to work from anywhere in the world. What more can I say? It's the ultimate dream for someone like me who's always been looking for the ability to travel and the ability to be flexible. You know, if you don't want to work today, I'm sitting here today right now as we talk looking at a lake that I live on, that many days I'm here on the lake, I'm out in a boat during the week. I'm the only person on the lake. It's a 6,000-acre lake. Mm. Everybody else has gone to work, and I'm sitting out there. And a lot of days I'll take my work out there. I'll sit in a boat. Lisa and I will just go sit in the middle of the lake and drift along doing our work.
Sounds a lot like Saturday, Vic.
Every day Saturday here. Let me say, I'm every day a Saturday at the lake, you know.
Hey, let me ask you about work, Vic. Why do most people work hard, right? Life's about you work hard, you work hard, you work hard, and then you retire to pasture and you probably die not too long after that. I mean, it doesn't sound like, and I don't want to minimize what you do, but it sounds like you put in a lot of effort up front, and now you earn a substantial income, but you've earned the right to receive that income because you worked hard up front, but you don't work as hard now as you did 8 years ago, do you?
I don't work as hard as I did 8 years ago, and I'm working less and less and earning more and more. And because, you know, I Bob Proctor was very instrumental in teaching me that the equation is not about how hard you work. There's no way at all that you can equate the amount of money that you make to how hard you work. I know a lot of poor people who work very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are in my family. Where I think it, you know, I think there's a cultural thing. I know I grew up being trained, you know, to work hard. There's almost, I used to certainly almost have a badge that I wore proudly proclaiming how hard I worked. It was almost, a badge of honor to me. And I certainly think that you need to be always in a productive, creative place. I think that's why we were created, to create. I don't have any desire or dream, you know, to go spend every day on the golf course in total, you know, luxury or anything like that, because there's too many ways that I can contribute. There's too many ideas that I have that can improve my life by improving others' lives. There's too many possibilities and opportunities come by for me not to take advantage of the ability to create. But you know, there's a difference between creating and working so hard that you don't have time for your family, you don't have time for yourself, you don't have time for your spouse, you are out of shape physically, you're out of shape mentally, spiritually, emotionally. That's not the way, that's not the key to the kingdom, so to speak. And yet, there's so many people, particular socioeconomic group that you can limit that to. I know people who have seven-figure incomes that work too hard,
right,
who don't have time for anything else in their life. That's not the value and the benefit of being a creative and productive person. And you know, it's not about how hard you work. And you know, the old it's working smart. I know a lot of people who aren't that smart who make a lot of money. You know, it's not that either. You know, but it's about creating, it's about being productive, it's about providing, it's about serving. You know, one thing, and I know that you've mentored a lot with John, you know, one thing about John DeLemme, he's a servant.
Mm-hmm.
And he teaches that. And if you serve other people, you're going to be rewarded for that. And the more people you serve, the more you'll be rewarded. Now, some people can't see this analogy, but I don't begrudge Bill Gates for one penny. A lot of people don't like him. They're critical of him. I don't begrudge him one penny. I think he deserves every single thing that he has and even more, because his role in serving us, what he has provided for us, the opportunities, what he brought into our lives by, you know, what he created, has revolutionized my life and billions of other people's lives.
That's right.
He's been rewarded for that service. So it's not how hard you work, it's how big you serve. The more you serve, the more you'll be rewarded. And you don't have to work hard to do that. You just have to learn how to be creative and productive.
That's such a powerful statement, the more you serve. In 2005, when I had left my six-figure job and I chased my dream, unfortunately, I took about three steps and fell flat on my face, and we lost everything. And we were where you were in 1997, and I had two daughters at the time, one that was due a few months from that particular point, and it was another defining moment in my life. And fortunately, God blessed us, and we got it all back within the span of 12 months. It was unbelievable, because I did exactly what you did when you set out on that 90-day mission to be laser focused on what you needed to do. That was me. And the first thing we did when we had enough extra money is we sponsored a mission trip. And that feeling to be able to give back so people could get on a plane to go to Nicaragua to help people who bathe in creeks and don't have homes and don't know where their next meal is going to come from, you hit on a nerve there, Vic, that a lot of people may miss. That is that you have got to learn to give to start the receiving process, correct?
Well, we live in a sowing and reaping world. I mean, it's a principle of nature, and you know, any principle of the universe you can apply into your own life. I mean, gravity affects everything and everyone. There's not anything in nature that's not affected by gravity. It's a law of the universe. Sowing and reaping is a law of the universe. It doesn't just affect that seed of corn. You know, you can't go out and expect to harvest corn. You're in the Midwest. I was up there, and I was in Ohio the other day and saw all those fields and fields and fields and fields of different crops. You know, you can't expect there's going to be a harvest if you don't plant the crop. And you can't, you know, James Allen in As a Man Thinketh, you know, talks about you can't expect to get one crop if you planted another crop. You know, you're not going to get tomatoes unless you plant tomatoes. If you planted corn, don't expect tomatoes. And it's all about what you sow into the universe, what you sow into other people's lives. You're going to reap that, and you're going to reap that many times over. You know, Christians know that it's 7 times 70 or more.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you, again, go back to what I said earlier about cause and effect, that sowing and reaping is just another way of looking at cause and effect. You know, if you sow something, that becomes the cause, and the effect is what you reap. And, you know, if you sow into other people's lives, you're going to reap, and you're going to reap a harvest much, much bigger than what you sowed. I mean, you know, I know you've learned this, too, from the people you serve with your website, that, you know, you're going to reap far more from what you're sowing into their lives than they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing that, you know, I've got a television show now on goals. In many ways, I've achieved a level of success there that I could have never, ever expected. I never would have ever guessed that I would end up being an international authority in the subject of goals, because for 20 years, you know, I just to be very candid and blunt and frank, it's an area that I really sucked in. I was not very successful at all. You know, I didn't understand the process, and I was very discouraged, and I was very frustrated, and I'd, you know, get all, you know, ready for the new year, and I'd have all my goals ready, and I'd start January 1st with a great, you know, set of goals and a plan and a lot of enthusiasm. And, you know, by February, I was discouraged and frustrated, and, you know, I threw them away or put them aside and, you know, went through the rest of the year and you know, repeated the process the following year like many, many, many other people do. So it's amazing that I would end up, you know, as an authority in that area. But what happened was I had some success, and I started teaching some principles that I'd learned from, you know, because the stuff I teach is not anything I created. It's principles that have been around for thousands of years, and the same principles that were taught by Napoleon Hill and Earl Nightingale, and the principles that are taught today by Jim Rohn and John DeLemme and Bob Proctor and many others. And I simply started teaching those principles, and the more that I taught, where I'm sowing in other people's lives, the more I taught, the more I learned. You know, if you really want to learn something, a subject, start teaching it. And you'll really learn a lot about it from teaching it.
That's right. That's dead on, and that's why I think a lot of people who serve, they enjoy serving, because not only do they get to help other people, it really helps the person teaching or the person serving just as much. Hey, let's talk about another topic which is near and dear to my heart, and that's the topic of dreaming, the power of a dream. And I know you're involved with No Dream Too Big, and you know when I talk to people, I host a teleseminar, I do any coaching, I tell them, man, my dream wakes me up at 3 in the morning. I mean, I literally can't get back to sleep when I think of all the stuff that I want to do and all the stuff I really, really have a passion for. And that's my dream. I mean, the dream of making every day Saturday. But can you talk about just the power of dreaming, Vic?
Well, you know, when people come to me, and, you know, we have a number of different coaching programs, and many of them are group coaching programs, but I have some where I actually do some personal one-on-one interaction, and, you know, I'll be on the phone with someone, and they'll tell me what their particular challenge is. And so much of what I hear is, I got a problem with procrastination. I got a problem staying focused. You know, those two things probably are responsible for 70 or 80 or 90% of what I hear someone say as to why they are not where they thought they would be at this particular time in the year. Focus or procrastination, and both focus and procrastination, in my opinion, can be traced back to only one of two things. It's one of two things almost every single time. It's either the belief that you have in the goal that you've set, or it's you don't have a very big dream. You know, there is nothing at all that a small dream can do for you. It has no energy. It won't attract any help or support. No one wants to follow a small dream. You know, you'll never get anyone willing to help you accomplish a small dream. Who wants to be involved with something that doesn't have a big reward, a big payoff? A big dream gives you energy. It gives you enthusiasm. It attracts a following. It will bulletproof. If you take two things, if you take a big dream, and I'm talking about a dream so big that it takes your breath away.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest challenge every year is to keep dreaming every year to get my dream bigger and bigger and bigger until I can get to that point where it takes my breath away, where there's that little queasy feeling in the pit of my stomach that you feel when if you have a little fear of heights. It's when you get up a little bit too high and you get that, ooh, that little queasy feeling. Or, you know, some people say that, when they're called on to speak or something, they get that feeling in the pit of their stomach. It's just adrenaline. It is your body's reaction to a release in adrenaline. Well, if you don't get that, when you think about your dream, then you don't have a big enough dream. It should take your breath away. It should scare you just a little bit. And if it does, you're on the road to going after something that can keep you going despite the obstacles that come along. Because if you take a dream that big and you combine belief with it, you are unstoppable. Napoleon Hill says in Think and Grow Rich, that desire and faith is the first cousin of belief, so you can almost use those words interchangeably. Desire and belief are the beginning of all achievement, he says. Desire and belief. If you have nothing but desire, which is a big dream is desire. You combine the emotion of desire. He calls it in the book Think and Grow Rich, he describes it as white hot desire. We don't use that word a lot. It's not a word that's used in our everyday language like it was in the 1930s when he wrote that book, when, you know, it was predominant, a lot of people employed in manufacturing and where they might see in a factory some fire that was white hot. That's extremely, extremely hot. When you have a desire that's white hot and you have faith, you're unstoppable. Well, that's what a big dream is. A big dream is a big desire. And when you can tap those two emotions, desire and belief, there's nothing that can come against you that will stop you. But if the dream's not very big, if the belief or the faith is weak, then you'll give up at the first sign of an obstacle. And that's probably the biggest challenge I have for people is go back and get a bigger dream. Go back and work on your belief. You know, when I get around people like Bob Proctor, who always challenges me with my dream. You know, I may think I've got a big dream, and Bob can show me that it should be twice as big, three times as big, four times as big. And that's, to me, I think the secret behind most every major success story I know is they just had a huge dream. They had a belief that was bulletproof, and then they were unstoppable as they started moving toward it.
So what happens, Vic? You got a 7 or 8 year old child who thinks they can be an astronaut. They think they can be president of the United States. They think they can do all these great things. And then that same 8 year old is 38 years old, and they just want to make it to Friday. What happened in that 30 year span?
Well, life did. Life did. They, people along the way told them they couldn't do it, and somewhere along the way they started believing them. You got to remember, Bill Clinton was, whether you liked his politics or you didn't like his politics, has a great story, in my opinion, and it's worth studying. came from a little town. Hope, Arkansas is not a very big town. He came from a very little town, a very small town in Arkansas. Now, his mother had remarried, and she married a car dealer. So, you know, he didn't grow up in a log cabin or anything like that. He had a comfortable life growing up, but he's from this very small backwater town in Arkansas, and he goes to Washington to a boys' state conference when he was 16 years old. And as part of that conference, he got an opportunity to meet the President of the United States. At that time was John Kennedy. That meeting gave Bill Clinton the desire and simultaneously gave him the belief that he could be President of the United States. And, of course, he became the youngest governor in the history of Arkansas, served 10 or 11 terms, and then was elected 10 or 11 times in Arkansas, and then went on and became one of the youngest presidents, if not, I can't remember whether he was the youngest or next to youngest. Kennedy, I believe, was younger president, but that was a dream that started when he was 16 years old. Now, along the way, you know, we know of a lot of things that had gotten his way along the way. He still had a huge, huge desire for it and a belief that it would happen. So between 8 and 38 in your example, the belief that it was possible to be an astronaut was taken away. A lot of times we give away our rights. We let other people make the decision for us when they tell us that you're not smart enough to be a doctor. And we accept that as true. So we co-opt ourselves. We give away our rights. And, you know, it's really... You know, if I look and see most people, Benjamin Franklin had an interesting observation. He said that most men die at 25, and we bury their bodies 40 years later.
Powerful. It's true. It's true. You see it. I refer to it in my ebook as the dream stealer. I mean, it's somebody who does not have a dream, so they end up stealing yours, and it's sad. But it happens every day.
Absolutely.
So a lot of the audience that's going to be listening to this CD, Vic, they're going to be thinking, that's Vic Johnson. Come on. I mean, Vic Johnson, that's not me. I'm Joe Smith living in mid-America. I've got my job, my 40 to 50-hour-a-week job. I would love to be able to have more freedom in my life. I've got three kids. I've got a mortgage. I've got the only thing I have is my 401k and pension. Hey, that's Vic Johnson. That's his story. I mean, this is my story. What do you say to that individual, Vic? They want to be free, but what do they do? I mean, what's the next step?
Well, I mean, they were farther ahead than I was 10 years ago because I did have three kids, but I didn't have a 401k and I didn't have a job. So, you know, they were farther along than I am, you know. They're starting from a better place than I was 10, 11 years ago. You know, it's like, it's simply, and it just sounds so easy, and it just sounds like so simple that most people just, you know, they really miss it. They really don't get it. But it's so simple that it's nothing but a decision. You know, I had a choice that I had to make in 1997. And that choice was that I was going to continue to live in the miserable life that I was living and that I was going to just live there. You know, I was going to live there. That was a choice I had. I see people that have made that choice. Today they have severe alcohol problems, severe drug dependencies, or some other dependencies. They have miserable relationships or have lost their relationships. I see people who made that decision. You can tell the light's gone out in their life when you see how they live and when you can't, they can't look you in the eye because they don't want you to see that the light's gone out. I that was a decision that I had to make. And when you're in that place, you're tempted to make that decision. You're tempted, you know, to just take a powder and pack it all in. The other decision is that some way, somehow, you know, I can come out of this. And that was what I kind of banked on. You know, that's faith. And not really from a religious or spiritual perspective, but just speaking from a principles perspective. You know, in the New Testament, it says that faith is so powerful that even a very, 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 very tiny amount can move mountains. And we read that story, and we really don't get that the impact of what it really means.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take a lot of faith to accomplish some big things. So I made the decision that I was not going to live there. I couldn't live there. I mean, I could not live anymore in that place. And I reached a point, Sam, that I think some people would be served well if they were where I was at, because I reached a point where I was willing to do whatever it took.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it took was that I had to go to work on myself. And that was where it had to take place, because everything in my life was created in that 6 inches between my ears. And the miserable life that I had in 1997 I created between my ears, and the life I have today I created in the same place. It was not created for me. The fact that the administration changed had nothing to do with it. There is absolutely zero influence or impact from outside of that 6 inches of space that had anything at all to do with either one of those occurrences. There was no one who, other than me, who was responsible for where I ended up in 1997, and there's been no one other than me responsible for where I live today. Now, could I have done what I do today without other people? No. I depend on a lot of people to do the things that I do every single day. But I'm the one who had to make the choice and design my life. And what I did in 1997, when I made the choice, and again, it was a decision and a choice, and it sounds simple, and it is simple to make the decision. Now, you know, you got to stick with that decision every day once you've made it. And I made the decision that I was coming out of that place, and I began to cast the dream, and I just simply every day walked toward that dream. Some days I stumbled toward that dream. Some days I crawled toward that dream, and some days I couldn't even move. All I could do was look up and see the dream. But I moved every day, you know, and tried to move every day toward the dream. And I put it out there in front of me, and, you know, that was a dream that I could reach a point in my life where money did not make the decision of, you know, I didn't have to make the decision of whether, you know, you could eat. I mean, Sam, it is a miserable feeling when your children get up in the morning to go to school and you haven't got the stupid money for their lunches.
Mm-hmm.
It's a miserable feeling. And, you know, you reach a point where you say, you know what, I'm not going to live like this anymore. I'm not going to take this anymore. And when you can kind of get to that point, what I fondly call sick and tired of being sick and tired, then you may be at the place and time where you're ready to do whatever it takes to come out of that. And, you know, it again, faith is such a big part of it. I had the belief and the faith that if I worked on myself and that I continued to try to do everything that I possibly could, you know, I created a habit because it was told, you know, I was told I should do this, and again, I was willing to do anything and everything, and so I would get advice from mentors, and I would get programs and plans that I could embark on, and then I would do them. You know, you didn't have to tell me to go do something. If you said this can help you get from where you're at to where you want to go, all you had to do is tell me that, and I would go do it. You didn't have to come back a month later and say, well, are you doing that? Because when they told me, if you'll start reading every day, at least 15 minutes a day, out of a good book, and that means not People Magazine or some other nonsense about other people's, the dream that they're living, but if you started reading some good biographies, if you started reading some personal development self-help books, and you spent 15 minutes a day, every day in a book, if that's a habit you develop, you'll be able to tell a difference at the end of a year. They told me that. Sam, I started reading. Some days I'd read 2 or 3 hours.
Amazing, isn't it?
Because I got so hungry. I mean, I said, well, geez, if 15 minutes will get you there, what will 2 or 3 hours? I'm going to, So I was that focused on solving it. And so in the process, I developed a lot of good habits. You know, I got to the point where, I've read 1,000 books in the last 10 years. That's about 1,000 times more books than most people will read in their adult life.
That's right. That's right, bro.
I reached a point where I didn't listen to music anymore. I didn't listen to the radio. I didn't watch television. I was listening to personal development. And, do I listen to music now? Absolutely. I had a mission. I was on a mission. And while I was on that mission, I was focused on getting out of that place, and that's what it took to get out.
Amazing, amazing. And when you talk about failure, and I heard John, I think it was one of John's calls, you quoted Dr. Joyce Brothers, you had heard it recently, that you cannot consistently perform in a manner that is inconsistent with the way you see yourself.
Yeah.
And people that have failed, Vic, most of the time won't get up, dust themselves off, and go towards their dream again, because they feel like a failure now. That is a noun, not a verb anymore, and the self-esteem has hit rock bottom. Can you talk about failure?
Well, yeah. In fact, I was talking to that with one of our Champions Club members earlier today. You really got to change the way that you look at that word failure. I like to tell the story about Maxie Fowler. That's one of the clearest examples of a person who really understood what it's all about. But Maxie took the California bar exam for the first time when he was 36 years old, and he failed. And he took it again, and he failed, and again he failed, and again and again and again and again. And he took it in L.A., he took it in San Francisco, he took it in Redwood, he took it in San Diego, he took it everywhere they offered the California bar exam, and he flunked it. He took the California bar when his kids were young and living at home, and then his own two sons grew up, went to law school, and when each of them took the California bar, he took it with them, and he failed. One of his sons opened a law office. Maxie went to work for him as a law clerk, took the California bar exam, and he failed. At an age when most people are thinking about retiring, this guy is still taking the California bar exam. After 25 years, he spent over $50,000 in testing fees. He spent over 144 days of his life in testing rooms. Maxie Fowler took the California bar for the 48th time, and he passed.
Wow. Amazing.
And still practices law in California today. Was recognized last year by the California Bar Association. Interesting. Now, you got to know that, when he went out to the post office or his mailbox, the 15th or 16th time, and he got that letter and he brought it into the house, a little nervous about opening, sat down at the kitchen table. His wife comes over, puts her arms on his hands on his shoulder, and he opens that envelope up, and they both read that letter together and realize he's failed again. You got to know, she's human.
Mm-hmm.
Maxie, maybe you weren't cut out to be an attorney, you know. maybe you should look at accounting, Maxie, or maybe medicine or something, but maybe you're not cut out to be an attorney, you know. You got to know that his friends weren't any different than our friends. You know, after 18 or 19 or 20 times, you know, his friends are going to do what our friends are going to do. They're going to, you know, Maxie, you know, they lock people up. They commit people for less than this, you know. I mean, are you sure you want to keep doing this? I mean, you got to know there are a lot of people and a lot of things coming against him. But Maxie Fowler had a dream, and he didn't see each of those times as failure. You know, when you stop, and I know you have young children, you know, I've been opportunity to see my granddaughter a lot over the last 6 months because my daughter works for me, and she brings my granddaughter to work. And yesterday, they were over here yesterday, and, you know, my granddaughter's about 6 months old, and, you know, she's trying to stand up, and, you know, she's sitting up, and, you know, she's doing all those things. But when you watch them, you know, you see failure. You see them, you know, not be able to roll over, and they just continue to try, and they don't start bawling and you know, they don't quit and throw their hands up in the air and all of that. They just try again. They know what doesn't work, so they try something else. And then when that doesn't work, they know what doesn't work that way. They just try something else. I think it was Dwight Smith. There was a speaker I heard about 7 or 8 years ago, and I never really understood it at the moment, but I knew it was something that I wrote down because he said, "There are no mistakes in life, only lessons." And it's the same way. There are no failures in life, only lessons. You know, we look back at what Maxie did, and we see failure each time. He never saw that. It was just another step. It was just another lesson along the way to what he was going to eventually do. He is the only one who could see the end. All we could see was failure. And that's so, you know, that we do the same thing about ourselves. I was on the, you know, phone today with someone who spent the last couple of years making a phenomenally huge effort in multi-level marketing, and they were not successful in achieving the goal they had. And about 3 or 4 times in the conversation, they used the word failure. And it was obvious in the conversation that they weren't feeling too good about the experience. And so I said to him, I says, "Well, let me share this with you." I said, "You know, I spent 10 years in the multi-level business, and I never, ever achieved the level of success that I wanted to. I never achieved the goal that I set out to do. In fact, I was a long ways from achieving it."
Mm-hmm.
"Now, would you consider me a failure?" But before you answer the question, I got to tell you that what I do today, I could not have done without the experience that I got during those 10 years. Because a lot of what I know today, I accumulated during that experience, and I could not teach and train the people that I do today had I not had that experience. Now, I earn a healthy 7-figure income today because of that experience, and I could not earn that without that experience. So was that a failure, or was it just another step in the direction that I had to go?
A powerful, powerful lesson on failure. And you're right. It's not. It's just an opportunity to learn. I think failure is awesome. Would I have liked to have lost everything 2 years ago? No. In an ideal world, I certainly would not have. The hardship, it put me through a lot of sleepless nights and looking at my kids thinking, "Oh, my God, what have I done?" But 2 years removed from that, I can't imagine not going through that.
Right.
And the person that has allowed me to become, and the passion at which I go after my dream and the Every Day is Saturday dream. I mean, now I'm able to communicate. I would have been a phony had I not gone through that, because now I can't help people that have been through there, you know?
Right. Well, so. I mean, that's exactly my feeling, Sam, 100%. I couldn't agree more. It was very, very painful. It even, you know, I tell people about it, I share my story, but it's even somewhat painful every time I do that. I would not want to have to live through that again. But I could not have what I had today, had I not lived through that. So because of that, I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Yep. As would I. Yeah, I want to talk also about Claim Your Power Now. We're coming up on the hour, and I know you've been gracious with your time, Vic. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about how Claim Your Power Now was started. Just for those of you listening to this CD, the CD will be out the end of June 2007. Claim Your Power Now will be in Los Angeles October 12th, 13th, and 14th of this year. There's still gold packages, VIP packages available, but talk about the event, Vic.
Well, you know, I started the event because of the tremendous impact a similar weekend experience had in my life, and I wanted to deliver that same kind of experience. I wanted to be able to deliver a weekend that could transform people's lives. And, you know, we started last year. We had our very first one. We were very fortunate to have Bob Proctor and Jim Rohn, who had never appeared on stage together in 40-something years, both of them being out training millions of people around the world. And so we kicked off the very first one with somewhat of a historical event in itself, and it was phenomenally successful. We had no idea that we could reach people the way we did. Of course, we had people travel from all over the world. We had people from Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Europe, and then we actually had people that came from Nigeria, where I believe the ticket price was something like 3 or 4 months' salary, not counting what it took to the transportation cost, et cetera. So we were touched. I was extremely touched by the people who came from Nigeria to be there. We had a phenomenal weekend. We had people that let us know that their marriages had been transformed, that their lives had been transformed. And so it was kind of a test thing for us. You know, I want to go do one. I really want to deliver the same kind of experience. And literally Bob Proctor put me on the spot that Sunday as we were wrapping up the weekend. So many people had expressed their excitement at having participated in the weekend that Bob, you know, put me on the spot in front of everyone and said, would you have another one next year? And we agreed to. And so we were going to go West Coast this time. We were on the East Coast last year. We're going to go West Coast. And we're, you know, right at LAX at the Los Angeles International Airport. So you can come from just literally anywhere in the world, fly straight into Los Angeles, and within, you know, a couple of minutes be at the hotel. And we've got another great lineup that I'm really fired up about, because we've got some people coming back from last year. Bob is back, of course, since he was on our stage last year. He's been on Larry King's show twice. He's been on Ellen DeGeneres. He's the star, obviously, of the Secret DVD. He's gonna rock and roll. He's got a very special program he's sharing with us about the law of attraction, which will be extremely interesting, I'm sure. John DeLimmy, our friend, obviously, is back with us again. That's going to be powerful. John always rock and rolls, and this is going to be, I know he's going to be fired up. We've already talked about it several times. We've got Cynthia Kersey, who wrote Unstoppable. In fact, she's the one who first brought to my attention the story of Maxie Fowler, and she has got some incredible ways that people can become unstoppable in whatever it is they're trying to do. We got Lisa Jimenez, who wrote Conquer Fear, is back. She's got a new book out called Don't Mess with the Princess, and it is dynamite. And I'm telling you, the ladies will go nuts when they hear this. And it's a powerful, powerful message. We were very fortunate to land Jim Stovall, who Jim went blind when he was 29 years old, woke up one day, had lost his sight, has done some phenomenal, phenomenal things in the last 15 years. One of the things he did, he wrote a book called The Ultimate Gift, and that book was recently made into a movie. In fact, it was playing in theaters around the country, just got a number of big Hollywood stars in it, And the DVD comes out next month, and Jim is going to share with us about his life, both before he went blind and since he went blind, and he's going to really share with us what he had to do that day when he had locked himself in a 9x12 room and after he'd gone blind, and just pretty much came to the decision that he was just going to stay in that room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've both been down, Sam, but, you know, in our case, we lost money. I don't know what I would have been like had I lost my sight.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, it's a powerful, powerful story. And we've got some other folks, but one person I'm extremely excited is going to be with us, a guy who's been a phenomenal mentor of mine. In fact, he invited me a couple of weeks ago, and one of the big dreams, Sam, that I mean, I could go on and on about all the things that we get to do, but John Goddard is the world's number one goal achiever. He's been to the top of almost every major mountain in the world. He was the first person in the history of mankind to go the full length of the Nile River, which is 4,200 miles. He did it in a 16-foot kayak. He still holds 29 civilian airspeed records, and he's flown all types of aircraft, jet aircraft and whatever. You know, he's lived in over 120 countries with over 200 different tribes. He's accomplished over 550 major goals. A phenomenal, phenomenal inspiration. He invited us to California. Lisa and I flew out there, and he took us on an adventure, a one-day adventure that he had out there into the San Gabriel Mountains. And we were the only people, Lisa and I were the only people in the group that were not members of the Los Angeles Adventurers Club. Mm-hmm. And in that group that we went on was the guy who invented the first human-powered submarine. There was the guy who just got through doing a National Geographic special on oceanography, and just a phenomenal lineup of people. Well, John is going to do our VIP lunch on Saturday, and I will,
wow.
I'll tell you, if you had to go around the world to come to L.A. just for that lunch, believe me, it would be worth it. So we're excited. It's going to be a fun time. We've got a great lineup and some more surprises. And I'll tell you, it's going to be fun. People can get information at claimyourpowernow.com, and they can also claim 10 hours of live success training. And some of it's already been done, so they can get recordings of that with Bob Proctor and with Laurel Langmire, the Millionaire Maker, who also will be at our event, with John Goddard, with Jim Stovall, and others.
That's excellent, Vic. You know, and it's great to see how it's come full circle from 10 years ago when you went to an event that changed your life. Now you're holding events because you had all the power. You didn't realize it, and you claimed it, and now you're allowing others to claim their power now. And, you know, for those of you listening to the Everyday Saturday CD, this has been an awesome call, and I hope everyone listening to it has gotten some tremendous value out of it. And for me, I'm a big fan of coaches. Coaches have coaches have coaches, and I'm a big fan of mentors. I'm a big fan of personal development. I wasn't always, though, and I can tell you that. Anyone can be where Sam Crowley is right now, and anybody can be where Vic Johnson is right now, but you need to claim your power, and it can turn on a dime for you. So, hey, Vic, before we end the call, I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for so much for being a great mentor to me. I watch you all the time on Success TV. I read all of your material, As a Man Thinketh. And just by your actions, what you have impacted, and my wife Angela, if she was here, would tell you as well. Actually, my wife Angela is jealous that I spend more time with Vic Johnson than I do with my wife Angela. But that will happen as you're developing. And I just want to say thank you very much, Vic.
Well, we appreciate it, Sam, and we're proud of the work that you're doing, the lives that you're touching, and please keep us posted on your progress.
I sure will. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.